Okay, folks, let's get back underway. Kind of picking up from where we left off last time, we've been talking about the mechanics of the policy of evil to try to get a little bit more clarity and detail as to just simply coming along saying, well, it's an evil man, a strange woman. But before we get to the profile of the evil man, I just want to once again, by looking at some things that God's Word tells us about the way these temptations are going to come and the way that the adversary is going to work, what we can come along and say is that we know some things. There's some things we don't know, but one of the things we do know from like that 1 Corinthians 10:13 passage that we were talking about earlier, that the major tactic of the evil man and evil men, and in the first go-round of this battle and this contention that we're going to be in with the adversary, is going to be in the area of temptation. When he talks about there hath no temptation, but will with the temptation, that's what we're to expect. We're not to expect somebody to come up and toilet paper our house or something. What we're expecting is that somebody, that what we're going to be getting in this very most mild round is, and we'll explain how this is going to happen in a moment, but the temptation, once again, to back that light off, whether it's, and it'll be, the temptation, I can almost guarantee, is going to come through some kind of intimidation. That there'll be some kind of either shame or fear, some kind of intimidation to back that off and not take that stand and begin to dim that light. But specifically, being tempted in the area of the six things that are listed by the Apostle Paul in verse 13 of chapter 13, those works of darkness you see on the bottom of the board, and to actually begin to pursue those things. But our armor of light right now is going to be sufficient, as it's made up of the discretion and the understanding, to deliver us from the way of the evil man. Now again, as to the mechanics of the policy of evil, we need to be able to know how that's going to take place by these evil men. What are we supposed to expect in this world from these agents of the adversary who stand to oppose and resist our light? And so the truth of the matter is, and again, I know this is really, 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 really basic, and I don't mean to be repetitive, but Come on back to Proverbs chapter 2, because the profile's given to us there. We've gone over it. We just haven't paid as much of attention to it as we need to give it. And we're going to give it a little attention in the next two Bible classes. But in Proverbs chapter 2, again, remind yourself of the fact this was the first time your father ever told you about your opposition. This was before any experience with it ever took place. This was back when you were in Sonship Establishment. Kind of thinking through Romans 8 there, where you're told about those five probing questions and the real enemies that you're going to have to the success of your sonship life, and that God Himself, our Father, and His curriculum has provided for our success in all those areas. But before you ever experienced anything, the Father wanted you to know what you're going to be up against. And so the Son is told in advance what His opposition is going to consist of. And again, the mechanics are something that we're going to get into in a moment, or start to get into. But the two agents that you're aware of, that you are listed there, is the evil man, which the discretion, the armor is going to preserve, is the discretion, the understanding is going to preserve and keep you, to deliver you from the way of the evil man. And then in verse 16, to deliver you from the way, from the strange woman. And these are the two agencies that are going to carry out the satanic policy of evil against us as sons in our time here on this earth in order to separate us from the love of Christ. And they're going to do so with a specific designed order of going from tribulation to distress to persecution to famine to nakedness to peril to sword. And so those agents of the evil man and what we know as also as the plural evil men and the strange woman. By the way, We've talked about the evil man, the strange woman a lot here. And we're going to talk about, we're going to begin to look at the profile of the evil man. And we'll put that back up on the board. But let me just say something about the strange woman for a moment. In fact, I'm going to come back to her a little bit later on. I've already given you a little bit of homework to do on her. But did you ever stop to think, why, you know, the evil man, that's pretty self-explanatory. Evil. He's described as evil. And that fits very well with, you know, our understanding of evil and wickedness and ungodliness and all that kind of thing. But did you ever stop to think, why is the woman called strange? She's the strange woman. Do you know how most, but then this is just, I just can't stand to let these things go by, because anytime I can shine the light on the excellency of the King James, the Authorized Version, I want to do it. But she's called strange for a very important reason. In fact, this is, you know, why is she called the strange woman? Other versions change that word. Not all of them, but most of the other versions change it from strange to loose. She's a loose woman. Or immoral, an immoral woman. Why strange? Is she an immoral woman? I mean, is she depicted as immoral? Yeah, she is. Some versions just call her a harlot, which is pretty true. So what? But what is, if you were to think about, what is the discriminating difference between she's a loose woman, she's a whore, she's a harlot, she's an immoral woman? Why strange? Huh? Yeah, I think there's a tie there. That's interesting. I never thought of that, but that's a good thought. I think it ties in.
Is it more in contrast to your wife? Like you have your wife that you know, and you have this other enticing adulteress.
Yeah. Yep. That it's, you're on the target. Yep. And that additional information helps you to almost comes along as a little mini dictionary to help you understand why strange is being used there. So you're on the right track. You're
the father's been speaking, and now there's another voice coming, like the strange fire, but you know, I mean, it's something that was there and it looked, you know, it was appealing and it was similar.
Yeah. It's fun because the only reason I'm grinning is because you're doing exactly what I did, and you're going right around it, and it's almost like watching you ever go in a store where they put the little dime or quarter into the thing and it goes round and round and round and keeps getting faster and finally falls down? That's what you're doing. You're going around it, and you're getting closer and closer and closer, and you're doing perfectly. You're doing perfect. Right. Yeah, and all we've done, everything you're saying is bang on. It's just that I'm picky about getting to the radical root. Because the radical root idea is perfectly suited to the context. of why immoral or harlot or whore or any other description of this woman would be inappropriate. Take what Katie was saying. Apparently, in my home, in my neighborhood, there's people on our street who do this. I don't, because you ever realize that you're only living in a fraction of your house? I mean, you have a house, but you really don't live the bulk of your time. We kind of live in the back of our, I probably shouldn't say this because, you know, a robber listening, that, oh, I'm going to go over there. He could rip me off while I'm at home. But we have a family room that is just, I mean, we spend our whole time there. Apparently, there are some neighbors of mine who really pay attention to what's going on the street. And that's good. I'm glad they do that, because what they see from time to time is a stranger. Now, my question is, what is the most radical, root, basic, elementary issue when you look out on a street and you say, that's a stranger? What are you saying about them? There. It's someone who doesn't belong. Anything that is strange in any context doesn't belong. And that's in keeping with the overall context of you being influenced in any way, in any shape, in any form. This doesn't belong with that. That's where you start. That's the most basic issue. And you see how everything else you were saying builds right on top of that. But the radical root issue is a stranger is a stranger because they don't belong. There's something about them that you look at them and you say, they just, you know, some of my neighbors would even call the police. Somebody's standing out here and I don't know anything about them, but they just don't belong. And maybe they're okay, maybe they're not. But they don't belong in this place. Strange, the word strange or stranger, the radical root idea behind it is it doesn't belong. It's not supposed to be here. It doesn't belong to some place or locality, like a neighborhood I was just talking about, or does not belong to somebody. It doesn't belong to some person. It goes all the way, like, to bring it into what Eric was talking about. It's not your family. It's not your kin. The Oxford English Dictionary actually quotes our passage to describe what a stranger is, the strange woman, and says it denoting a class of persons. The strange woman is a harlot because the woman described as strange is strange in the sense that she is not one's own. She doesn't belong. She's not one's own wife. She belongs to you. She doesn't. That seems a very simple matter, but that is what you're going to be dealing with the policy of evil. The idea of, does this belong? Is this consistent with who I am in Christ? And not only that, it's far past that by now for many of us. It's, is this something that my Father abhors? Is this an object of his godly, righteous hatred? Is this part of those works of darkness that it repulses him because it's not just sinful activity, but it's activity that the adversary is actively engaged in pulling down the pillars of the institutions that he designed to be there for his son's benefit and their education and to have the relationship between them and him that he wants? Or is this something that the adversary is tearing down and destroying and erecting something to establish a relationship as your Satan-like or your Satanly father? The issue is, who's going to be your father on a day-to-day basis? So the idea of not belonging, the idea of having the kind of discernment and discretion That's what it's going to take with the strange woman. You're going to, I've seen them, I've actually knocked one over accidentally. I've told you this story when I was in Chicago. The very first time I ever ran into a prostitute, I literally ran into her. I wasn't watching where I was going, and I hit this woman and knocked her to the ground, and before I could even say it, do anything, I was helping her up, and it was kind of like, I'm sorry, ma'am, and I'm ma'aming her, well, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm realizing I've got no place to touch because if there's a lot of skin there, and I was going to try to, you know, wipe, you don't want to, and she, you know, I was with one of my friends, and she goes, that's okay, honey. She said, you and your friend come on up and we'll make it right. And Bill, I was standing like this, and Bill Dixon was like, come on. He said, you country bumpkin from Indiana, you have no idea what you're, I said, well, she looks like she's different. He goes, she is different. Yeah, you looked at everybody else, she didn't belong. Yeah, what? That's the idea. And that's very telling. Well, anyway, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on that, but I just, you can, every word of this is so carefully chosen. It's just fantastic. The strange woman. Well, let's look at the profile of the evil man for a little bit here. We'll get a little bit of this done. We won't get real far, but we'll get the ball rolling. What I want to do is, I want to go back to chapter 2 once again here in Proverbs, but I'm going to read, and there's a reason I want to do this. I want to read from verse 1. And that there's a reason why. I'll tell you in a moment. Verse 1, he says, my son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver, and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord, and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment, and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, and understanding shall keep thee. Now stop right there at verse 11. Even if you gave a cursory reading to those verses, without any real deep thought about the details of them at all, it tells you that the defensive power of your armor, of the discretion that's going to preserve you and the understanding that's going to keep you and deliver you from the way of the evil man, all of that is based upon the wisdom and the understanding. If you read those first 11 verses, that's why I did that. You can't, I'm giving you another warning, you can't understand why the evil man is doing what he's doing or the strange woman's doing what she's doing unless you have that information working. And what I'm saying, it's all based upon that wisdom and understanding, the words of your father, the curriculum of your sonship education, having been, what is the word he uses, received by you in vain. Received by you or not received by you. It's got to be received by you as a son. And not being received in vain. You've received that information. That's contingent upon what he's now going to say about the evil man. Otherwise, there's no real reason to even go on. In other words, it's not, this is not taking place. This that he's going to describe, what the evil man, and we're going to put the profile of what he's going to do to try to put your light out. That's not taking place. If the wisdom and the understanding is not taking place, then you're only kidding yourself about being in any kind of spiritual warfare. Now we're doing battle with the enemy and all this. You're kidding yourself. Or any kind of battle with the adversary. The truth is, sanctificationally speaking, if the first part of that isn't working, I don't mean the first part of Proverbs 2. I mean the first part of what Proverbs 2 says a son should know. is not effectually doing its job, you're basically, sanctificationally speaking, just the walking dead. So I just wanted to give that caveat again because of the necessity of the way God structures an education to take place. And I'm not saying that to belittle anybody or to make anybody discouraged. It's like I've said before, if you don't have the wisdom, get it. Just that simple. Easy peasy. All right. Let's move on. Verse 12 through verse 19. Once again, we read this at the beginning of our first session, but let's familiarize ourselves with it again. Beginning in verse 12, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths, and what you're getting is a list here. This is where we're going to derive our profile from. What we're about to profile comes from these verses. Who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they froward in their paths. And then we won't talk a lot about it, but to deliver thee from the strange woman, even the woman from the stranger which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the guide of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God, for her house inclineth unto death and her paths unto the dead. And I asked you once before, none that go unto her return again. What would make it so that if you went into her house, you're not coming out? That's what he says happens. He said, that never happened to me. I have volition. Well, that's not talking about you have volition. You can walk out anytime you want. Well, what would make a person, when they go into that house, not come out? He says, none that go into her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life. Now, the rest of this is really very much pointed toward Israel's program, so we'll stop right there. Well, notice verses 10 through 17. It's interesting. That's one long sentence. Beginning in verse 10 with that paragraph marker, if your Bible has a paragraph marker, that sentence runs all the way to the end of verse 17. That's one long sentence. The rest of the verses are all one sentence each in the chapter from there down. The first time, again, a son is told who his opposition is going to be is right here when he's going through his sonship orientation, especially his sonship establishment, and it's going to occur in that order, the evil man, the strange woman. Sometimes they're going to work together. I think that's something that is very true. You see that, I believe, there in Acts 17, as we talked about with the Apostle Paul in Thessalonica, when it says, but the Jews which believed not, moved with envy, took unto them certain lewd fellows of a baser sort. There you've got evil men, you've got men, you've got the religious aspect of the strange woman working in concert together. But what I want to focus on right now to give us a little bit of better understanding of what these guys are going to be like so we can identify them clearly, we're going to look at a profile here of the evil man. Now, we're not after a lot of details. And the reason why I say that is that we're in God's program with Israel, in the book of Proverbs. So when I say details, we're not after the details of how this is going to work out in God's program with Israel, because we're not in that program. They're given to... The details that you find here are given concerning Satan's activity in his policy of evil toward the remnant in God's program with Israel. What we're after in this profile is a general format. Do we see a pattern or a format that the evil man's going to employ to oppose you and resist you no matter what, how many dispensations or how many programs God might have? When the evil man works, this is a profile of how he works. This is his format. And I think that's very clear. Verse 12. My understanding is when you get verse 12, acts as kind of a basic overall brief of just very brief and general what he's going to be doing. Verse 12, of course, he says that the discretion and the understanding is going to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, comma, from the man that speaketh froward things. So you got two phrases there, from the way of the evil man and from the man that speaketh froward things. They're both in the context talking about the evil man. So I think what you've got in this basic, what I might call the the basic brief or a summary of the opposition of the evil man, you have two things. Now watch this, because this is going to really be cool. You've got two things going on. The evil man has a way, because it says to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things. Now again, I know this is real basic. But number one, you're going to be tempted and influenced by what the evil man does, his way. And then by what he says, some words coming out of his mouth. One of the things I thought was very interesting, when you read down, and I did this on purpose, when we read down from verse 1, there's one word that seems to come up again and again and again and again. In fact, it comes up 6 times in that section. It's the word understand or understanding. When he talks about discretion shall preserve you and understanding shall keep you. It's not going to separate you. Understand and understanding is used 6 times in verses 2 through 11. In just 10 verses, one word occurs 6 times over and over repeatedly. Understanding occurs 4 times and understand occurs twice, but together you've got 6 times that comes up. What I call, I don't know what you call that, but I call that emphasizing something. God is really putting an emphasis on understanding. I'm not trying to minimize discretion, but this understanding, this ability for you and him to be on, to have the same awareness of what's going on, to be invited into God's understanding, is a big different thing than just to be given his thoughts on a matter. So in brief, the first little brief, the opposition from the adversary is going to occur by using men, human beings, not gargoyles and supernatural creature boogeymen or demonic angelic beings that were made somewhere by Jim Henson's Muppets or the, you know, crew out in Los Angeles and Hollywood. These are going to be men, and those men are going to be the agents of the adversary. As such, they're going to employ 2 of the most basic means by which a person can be tempted and influenced. And if you sit here this morning and you look at that and say, ha-hum, that doesn't mean anything, you are in big trouble, because this is a big deal. He's going to influence, he's going to use 2 means by which a person can be tempted and influenced. One is a way, and a way is visual. What they do. And secondly is by speaking, audio, what they say. Audiovisual. Do you know that those two are the most basic way that information gets passed on or transferred to individuals? And I'm going to say this, to my understanding, it's the most powerful means of all the 5 senses. Audio and visual, even more than smell, than taste, than feel. What you hear and what you see. Now, why do I say that? I'll give you proof of that. I told Cindy, we watch these things. And there's a couple of them I really do enjoy watching, but I sit there and marvel at myself of how stupid it's watching these food shows. All right? Hell's Kitchen. Gordon Ramsay is... He's got like, why does he limit his vocabulary so? I don't know. Every other word is being bleeped out. And you want to say, you want to just calm him down and say, it's just food. Are you this passionate over your spiritual life? But we sit there and watch that. And I, you know, we would watch other food shows as well. And I'd sit there and I'd laugh. And Cindy'd go, well, what are you laughing about? I said, well, to show you how dumb I am, I'm sitting here watching a food show, and then what do they do after they prepare it? they eat it. Could you smell any of that? You can't smell it. Could you taste any of it? You can't taste it. How in the world do they get an audience? I said, you know, this is about like trying to watch a mime on radio. But people love those shows, right? All the food shows are just like crazy. Even a lot of the other shows have a food segment where they make food and then they eat it. And I'm supposed to sit there through the TV screen. I can't enjoy that. I can't, but I like it. Why do I like? Because it still is appealing to the two more powerful means of the transference of information and of influencing. And you walk away from there saying, I don't know what that smells like, and I don't know what that tastes like, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to go out and try it. It's like Hell's Kitchen. If I told Cindy, I said, if I ever went on Hell's Kitchen, which I would never do, Cindy showed me how to make scrambled eggs, and I made shredded eggs. I don't know what I did, but they shredded. It was like little pieces of thread, egg thread. Anyway, if I went on that show, buddy, you better believe I'd know how to make scallops and risotto. And I don't even know what risotto is. But every other thing, is scallops and risotto, scallops and risotto. And somebody always makes them wrong, and he smashes his fist in them. They go flying. He throws them at people and everything else. Buddy, I'd better know. It'd be like going on that Survivor show. I'd know how to make fire. If I was going to go, I'd know how to make fire. I'd make fire with my toes, but I'd know how to make fire. You know, I don't know why these chefs go on there. They don't know how to make risotto, and I don't even know what that stuff is, but I know enough to look and say, don't do that. He's going to throw it at you. And... But you get into all of this kind of thing, and it's a daggone food show. You can't smell it. You can't do the two things you've got to do with food to really enjoy it. Smell it and taste it. But we still get all enamored with it. That shows you the power of audio video. It shows you something of the power of what is done and something that is said. Now, your armor is made up of discretion and understanding is going to deliver you from the way of the evil man, from things you see him doing, and from that would tempt you to do them as well. A good illustration of that, by the way, is rioting. And we were talking about this coming into church today. You see some of the riots that go on today, and why in the world does somebody come along and they're protesting against, I don't know, the latest thing, whatever it is, some racist issue. And so a big bunch of people get together and they start protesting. And the protest winds up being a riot and they start looting places. What does a grocery store have to do with racism? Why do they pay the price of losing all of their material and having their place burnt to the ground just because they happen to be in the vicinity? Well, what happens in a mob mentality like that is that when you would have great inhibitions, there is something that happens in a person's inhibitions when you see someone actually doing something that you're restraining yourself from doing. The idea of throwing off restraints, the idea of throwing off any law, the idea of I've always wanted, it comes down to very simple things. I've always wanted a TV like that. We're rioting. There's no law. That guy took one. He took one. Well, I'll take one. Don't think that that's not a great impulse. Why do you think that grocery stores have the impulse buys right by the cash register? You see somebody else take a candy bar? I wasn't hungry for it, but that looks good. I'm going to take that. I'm talking about paying for it. But it's a good illustration. When a person does it in your presence, your inhibitions begin to lower. And you're more inclined to do that too. I'll give you the best example, even better than rioting, is Pentecostalism. There are people in Pentecostal churches who get up and do things they would never, ever do were they not, did they not have their inhibitions lowered. When you see a Benny Hinn show or you see some of these shows on TV, what you don't see is the 3 hours before the guy gets up there to start blowing on people. There's a really, well, I'm not going to, you know, knocking him over with his breath, with the Holy Ghost breath. There's a whole lot of preparatory work that goes into that to do what? To do what alcohol can do and to do what drugs can do, which is lower a person's inhibitions. Why do you think a guy when he's drunk gets up and just starts singing? That usually the most common thing that people say when somebody is drunk is, well, you got loud. They're not inhibited by anything. They just start getting loud. Their inhibitions lower. The same thing happens. It's like a drug or alcohol in the church services. When you can get through music, through what they see and what they hear, certain inhibitions begin to get lowered. And if you are a good person, I mean good at it, and I could do it, if you let me do what I wanted to do, I could probably get some of you in here to speak in tongues. If you'd let me do with you what needed to be done to prepare you for it, people get up there and they start swooning and speaking in tongues and throwing off their braces and things that they would never do in any other situation. That's what I'm talking about, of the power of what you see and what you hear. And so your armor is going to deliver you from the man that speaketh froward things. And that's a very big part of this. You're going to be delivered from his way, from what he's doing, and to deliver you from the man that speaketh froward things. You'll be saved, delivered, from being tempted and influenced by what this evil man says. By the way, notice that in both cases, the evil man and the strange woman, an emphasis is put upon what they say. Both of them are doing things, and both of them have that very powerful means to sway, to influence, and to oppose and resist by what they do to tempt you. But the emphasis seems to be always on what they say, and both of them have an issue of what they say. Both of them employ speech. The evil man speaks froward things, the strange woman flattereth with her words. Folks, who you listen to, and I say it that way for a reason. I'm not saying what you hear. Like, I can't ever hear a four-letter word or anything like that. What you listen to, what you give your attention to and listen to, is a critical feature in sonship education. A son knows his father's voice. And the issue is, are you listening to your father or some other father? And there are some things that the evil men are going to say that are called froward. And by the way, the issue that we talked about froward before, it comes up 3 times in verses 12, 13, 14, and 15, the word froward. Another word that is largely emphasized. And by the way, another word that gets changed, I think, in every modern translation. I don't think there's a single translation outside of the King James today that still uses the word froward. And we've analyzed that issue of froward. In fact, instead of me drawing, I put a drawing up here. And frowardness, in some of its more analyzed understanding, frowardness actually comes from the way in which you think. And then you're going to put that into, they're going to take a froward path, but the path that they're taking is froward because their thinking is froward. And as they continue on that path, it can become an untoward thing. But frowardness does originate in the mind, in the way a person thinks. But what I'm after is, again, the radical root issue needs to be more in mind. And when you think about that general root concept, The ungodly thinking goes counter to what is godly. That's the point of using the word froward. Because the general root concept, froward, by the way, let me just say at the outset, froward and forward, don't try to think of those two have nothing in common. Those are not related terms. They just look close. It's just got a couple letters flipped around. In fact, try and type some notes in Word or something and with trying to use the word froward. It'll flip those letters around every time. It's like you just want to, that autocorrect thing. I found out that what you can do, it autocorrects it, then you back up, and it'll put it back the way it was, and then you can go on. But every time I type the word forward, it wants to flip it around to forward. You meant forward. No, I didn't. Don't they make any of these computer programs based upon 1611? I need to go back in time, not forward in time. But anyway, forward, you think of the simple concept of just the word, take that and just think of the first part of it, fro. And the opposite of fro is to. By the way, when you take a child and you're going to push a child in a swing, the swing goes to and fro. Or to and fro, to and fro, to and fro. And the to and fro is not a description of the arc of the swing. The to and fro is a description of your perspective and to the child. He goes away from you, that's fro. Then he comes back toward you, that's to. So he goes to and fro and to and fro. So you have froward and you have the word toward, which is the opposite of froward. Think of toward and fromward, or froward. And either you're going to something or you're going away from something. And that's someone who thinks frowardly is disposed to go counter to what is right or what is reasonable. But there's an objective. There's a point of reference, an aim, a goal up here. And it's not a concept that simply deals with or focuses upon perverseness. That's one of the ways in which the modern translations all retranslate the word froward. But actually what you've got going on here are two directions. You've got going toward an object, an aim or goal, and if you go away from that object, aim or goal or objective, you're going froward from it. You're either going toward it or you're going froward. And man, that's a word that sticks in your thinking. Now, the most common way in which the modern translations retranslate the word froward, they use the word perverse. Well, something that is froward is perverse, but it's not exactly the concept that is carried by the shade of meaning that froward has, that wants to get the very first, most elemental concept from a father across to his son of what the evil man's going to do. You think that that evil man is taking you toward this aim, goal, and objective, when in reality, he's taking you away from it. In other words, that's the first basic concept the father wants the son to embrace. You're going to either go toward me or you're going to go away from me. You're going to go toward my wisdom and the power of my wisdom, or something's going to take you away from it. There isn't any gray area here. And so what you're left with is that basic. It's not just that it's perverse, but it's a concept that's not simply dealing with or focusing upon perverseness or rebellion or defiance or contempt or disobedience. The real powerful shade of meaning of forward is that it emphasizes the idea of going away from where you should go. That evil man, and that's why I say this is not detailed, the evil man is going to tempt and entice by what he does. He has a way to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, and he's going to have something that he says from the man that speaketh froward things. And the one determining factor that you can listen to and you should be keying on is what he's saying, taking me toward the works of light, the light of the truth of God's word, or away from it. Toward it or away from it. The aim and the goal and objective is the armor of light, of casting off the works of darkness. And it's going to be up to you. It's going to be different in every one of your cases. I can't tell you what he's going to say to you exactly. I can't tell you what people are going to pressure you to do exactly, or what you're going to see them. That's where your discretion is going to have to come in. That's where you're going to have to take the wisdom, the justice, and the judgment and be able to add those facts up and be able to come along and use some discretion to say, nope, that is dampening my light, putting my light out, and that is going forward. I'm going away from the objective. I'm not going toward it. Going froward doesn't get you closer to the goal, the aim, or the objective. It gets you further away from it. And by the way, unless you haven't, it hasn't hit you yet. You have the idea, why is this the basic brief of the man, the evil man? Why is it the general overall way in which he's going to be described, and then he's going to get some further description there's going to be six things that are going to come along and that are going to give you his basic agenda. We're going to get six things that give you his agenda, his objectives. But all of his agenda are going to be reached by those two things. And going back to that issue of what someone does and what someone says is the most powerful means to influence somebody. You've got the evil man who's going to have a way. The way is what he does. What he does is seen. He's got speaking. He's going to speak froward things. And what he speaks is heard, seen, and heard. Does that sound familiar? This is the payoff of the day. This is the connection. What? Yep, that's the connection. Let me connect it this way. When you cast off the works of darkness, what are you performing? It's designed to be seen and heard. It's the overt gesture that God designed for you to perform that's supposed to be seen and heard. Just like with Israel that we studied when they were back there in the wilderness. At Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, God had them plaster in very plain sight the law, the cursings and the blessings, so that the Gentiles could do what? Smell them? No. Taste them? No. See them and hear them. What is the adversary doing here? He knows how powerful God's methodology is and the psychology of human beings. To be persuaded by what they see and hear. And he's counterfeiting it. He's ripping it off. Utilizing it to his benefit. For his evil man to utilize the same means to enter into your mind through what is seen and what is heard. That's fascinating. That's fascinating. All right, so the basic summary of the brief, the tactics, just briefly, the brief of the tactics of the evil man is going to come in the form of people, of men, influencing and tempting you by the things they do, away, by the things they say, speaking froward things that are taking you away from your objective. And the design is by you viewing them and hearing them to ultimately separate you from the love of Christ, put your light out, and very simply move you away from where you should go. I don't mean so much even physically, but move you away from where you should go. So if that's his in brief, his profile, then what we're going to do is, next time we're going to, and I'm going to stop here. I don't think I've stopped early at all. I should have, because my throat hurts. But the basic objectives and the agenda we're going to give, and start familiarizing yourself with there's six phrases from verse 13, beginning in verse 13, who leave the paths of uprightness, comma. So there's one. To walk in the ways of darkness, there's a second one. Who rejoice to do evil, comma, there's a third one. And delight in the frowardness of the wicked, there's a fourth one. whose ways are crooked, there's a fifth one, and they froward in their paths, there's a sixth one. And from those six phrases, you get spelled out the profile of the evil man. Not the details of how he's going to do it, but the general format in which the evil man operates as he uses his way and his words to influence a father's son. All right? I think I'm going to stop. We'll start looking at that on Wednesday night. All right? Any questions? Does it make sense so far? Again, I know it's been really, really elemental, and most of you already know this stuff, but some of these little elementary things are very important, profound, and form the bedrock on which everything else is going to be built. All right, we'll stop right there, and we'll pick it up next time with our heads bowed. Heavenly Father, thank you for the opportunity of assembling together as a body. We thank you for this local church and for the love and the commitment and the tightness of it. And we thank you for the opportunity to continue to advance in understanding your word and being conformed in the image of Christ by it. We just pray for your wisdom in all these matters that we've dealt with from it, that we are better prepared than ever before for any opposition to us, that we look forward to that opposition with the more superior and powerful armor of light, and that we might be able to withstand these things to your honor and glory, to our benefit, and to overall being more than conquerors through you, Father, and your Son, who loves us so much. We thank you for that opportunity to display the power of your word in this world and to the angels, and we just pray that we continue to be edified thereunto, for we ask these things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. You are dismissed.